Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And a happy Thursday to each and every one of you. It's great to be with you here in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today we get to spend our final hour with Spider. That's right, Brad Spider Caldwell. 31 years on the Penn State football staff. The vast majority of those years in his career with Joe Paterno. He has plenty of stories. He has plenty of insight. He also has plenty of inside stuff that we will be talking about today. And it is the first time we've ever had Spider on the show. We are probably going to have him back on the show again the week of the Indiana game, because that's the week that they're going to take the special jerseys and bring them out. And Spider had a lot of input into what those jerseys look like. So the final hour will be with Spider today. Obviously, I've known Spider for all 31 years he's been here. Like the players, the other managers, the coaches, he is just one of those individuals where you don't like him, you love him. He's just one of the best ever, and I think you're going to enjoy hearing him on the show. He gives a lot of tours now at Beaver Stadium. He tells a lot of stories when he gives the tours. And I'm just thrilled that we're going to have him on today. And he's going to be joining me here in the Sunbury Motors Studio here in State College. So I'm looking forward to our conversation with him. There is baseball taking place this afternoon. Including the Pirates are playing this afternoon against Detroit after being run out last night by Justin Verlander 10-0. That happens. I mean stuff like that happens. But here is an update on what the scoreboard looks like in the major leagues. Of course, football tonight. You've got the Eagles taking on the Packers this evening. That game will be at 8 o'clock. This evening. Let's get to the Major League Baseball scoreboard from this afternoon. The Pirates in the bottom of the sixth inning lead at Detroit 6-3. And ironic, and Cincinnati leads San Diego 7-3, and that game is in the top half of the eighth inning. The Phillies play tonight against the Mets, 6:30 the airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, your official Phillies station. And so there you go.
Mets went and helped out the Indians. They sent Jay Bruce over to the Indians yesterday.
Yep, saw that.
Yep.
They were going to use them anyway.
It's the official waving of the white towel, as if they have a chance anyway, but, you know. As a fan, it's never fun to see.
Washington so far in front, and Colorado and Arizona are so far in front when it comes to the wild card race.
Oh, and the Mets are just embarrassing. I mean, it's not even worth talking about.
Let's see. Le'Veon Bell only hurting himself with his holdout. Well, there's two schools of thoughts on that. I understand why the Steelers GM would say that.
Of course.
Because that's okay. That is his. I mean, his job is to have personnel in camp and set to go. And so I don't blame Kevin Colbert at all for saying that. And Colbert says, "Quote: My feeling is there's nothing to be gained by a holdout. The situation won't change. It can't really change from our part on a long-term deal. So it hurts him not to be here." I'll be honest with you, though. He's going to come into camp, and he's going to be fresh.
Right.
It's not like he doesn't know the offense. He knows the offense. He's going to come in. He's going to have fresh legs.
And he's 25. I mean, you got to sign him for a few years. If he was 30, I could see it, but he's in the prime now. Now is the prime. If you lose him,
well,
I mean, he's holding out. He's holding out because he hasn't signed the franchise tender. That's the reason he's holding out.
Of course.
Second, he signs the franchise tender, he's got to be in there.
Right.
Well, he's not going to sign the franchise. What's today? The 10th?
Yep.
He's not going to sign the franchise tender probably till the 21st. He's still going to be out 11 more days.
Until it's necessary, right?
And he's going to come into camp, and he's like, ooh, Le'Veon looks quick. Yeah, he looks quick because the rest of you beat the heck out of each other. All right, so what the heck? He's only 25 years old. There's no question that when you start talking about the current top backs in the league, he's going to be in the conversation.
Absolutely.
But he can't play full seasons. And, you know, the Steelers are a perennial playoff team. Oh, and he's played one full playoff game.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's played one full playoff game.
I mean, he's a monster, too. He's consistent, 4.9 yards per carry for, like, his career. I mean, you can't.
That's a full yard per carry better than Jerome Bettis, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, 3.9 usually get cut.
I mean, he's only been right, exactly, and he's only played four seasons, and he's only played one full season. So I mean, but again,
that's the problem. Here's the problem: if you were the Steelers, in terms of a long-term contract is when he's out there, he's terrific. But let's start with the first word of the sentence: when. He's been suspended, he's been injured, and he's played in one full playoff game. That's it. That game in Kansas City is the only full playoff game he's ever played in.
Well, he played one against Miami, too, same year.
I meant Miami, whatever. He only played one.
He played Miami and Kansas City, and then he was non-existent against New England.
That's it. That's all. I mean, honest to goodness, I mean, I can tell Otis Anderson is a better postseason runner than Le'Veon Bell. Oh. Why? He kept showing up. No, see, this is what bothers me about generalizations, okay? Otis Anderson is a better postseason running back than Le'Veon Bell. Why? Because he kept showing up. You can't be better if you're a no-show.
Well, that's
it's impossible to be better if you're a no-show. Impossible.
That's absolutely true. You can't argue with that logic.
Right? You can't be. That Steelers fans, oh, please. Oh, excuse me. He kept showing up. What does your guy do?
Yeah.
Okay?
Otis Anderson
He's a no-show.
Otis Anderson has a career 4 yard per carry career total.
Right. But he keeps showing up.
Yeah, it's true.
When he had a chance to be in postseason play, he was there. Le'Veon Bell, okay, roll the dice, might be there, might not be. Now who's the more talented guy? Bell is.
Well, duh, yeah.
Who's the better all around guy? Bell is. Okay. Yet when it comes to actually playing the games, Anderson would be. Because he played.
So then,
Le'Veon Bell watches playoff games.
So then, do you think that he doesn't deserve the money he's asking for? Then, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right?
Well, first of all, okay, he's been suspended for league drug violations,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's not reliable. And number two, he's been hurt. That's not reliable.
Right.
Now. That has to balance out somewhere in the ledger with when you're out there, you are incredibly talented, and he is. He is an excellent blocker. He runs routes as a running back like a wide receiver does.
Yep.
And he's an outstanding running back who's slimmed down, he's cut now, and he's a real force. But to me, you lose out on the max out because of your unreliability in your past.
So you would hold him out. You wouldn't pay him, is what you're saying.
Well, he's going to get paid regardless. He's a franchise guy.
But what?
Okay, there's going to be a number he'll get this year, and then if he goes through a full season, right, and plays the full playoff and is effective, I'd max him. But I got to see that first. I haven't seen that from him. I've got to see that first from him to give him a long-term contract that starts to give me an idea that he's on the path of being reliable.
So then explain this to me and the audience. Then what is he holding out for then if he can't get more money?
Oh, no. He's just holding out of principle because he has a franchise tag.
So he's just resting, essentially.
Yeah, he's hanging and waiting. That's
gotcha.
All. He's not doing it. There's nothing sinister about what he's doing.
See, when I see holdout, I automatically assume that it's, you know, I want more money and I'm not coming until I have more money.
Well, what he would like the Steelers to do is to give him a long-term contract before he goes to camp. But that's not going to happen. He's going to be the franchise tag guy.
So can he sit out?
Well, he can sit out. It means he gets no money.
Right. Which is, I mean, that's silly. He wouldn't do that, but...
I mean, the only person I know that has the means to survive something like that's a suit. So, I mean, it's just, you know. The suit has the means to withstand a WKOK holdout.
Well, WKOK holdout.
Right. Now, the question is whether Roger would call him.
Right. No, we're good without you. We're good.
We're okay. Nice look at it. I'm holding out. Okay.
All right.
Go ahead. I don't care.
Well, yeah, have a good time.
We're fine. Now, they know he's going to have to get into camp, and he'll take this till, like I said, maybe August 21, 22, right around there, and then he'll go into camp. And he'll play this year, and again, if he has a really good year, he'll put himself into a spot where he's got to get a long-term contract. But again, the Steelers do have a lot of money wrapped up in Antonio Brown. They've got a lot of money wrapped up in Ben Roethlisberger. There is a point, you know, where you only have so much.
Well, yeah. I mean, how this window on this team has got to be closing. They have no quarterback prospect at the moment, and Ben's getting older.
You see, Josh Dobbs is going to start tomorrow night. It's not Landry Jones. It's Josh Dobbs.
No, I bet the Steelers fans are going wild.
It's a preseason game.
I was going to say,
did you hear Dan Patrick's commentary?
Oh, yeah.
It was so spot on.
It's true. It's totally true. You talked about it all morning, about how do you buy into this? Like,
I mean, I don't buy into it at all. I'll tell you right now, 20 years ago, maybe 25 years. Let's say 25 years ago. Boy, I was the first guy to get to the TV set and go, okay, here we go. It's a preseason. All right, yeah, okay. And you know what? As time has gone on, I watched less and less and less to almost none. Yeah. Because they're not putting anybody out there. You know what? I'll wait till the open. Now, the opening Thursday night, I've got a baseball game that night, but I'll be, as soon as I get out of there, I'm going to be watching the opening game.
Right. If all things were equal, you'd totally watch. I mean, I would watch the first like 5 minutes of the Jets game, you know, tomorrow night, because it's good to watch football, whatever. But I mean, the reality is they're playing against guys that will most likely be bagging groceries in like 3 weeks. So the reality is, what am I seeing? I'm not seeing anything. I'd rather go watch flag football down the road. It's the same level of talent.
Well, what you're doing is that there's only one cut down. And what you're watching is essentially the battle for spots 35 to 45.
Right.
That's what you're watching in the preseason. The battle for spots 35 to 45. So, I've always felt that two preseason games would be enough. You know darn well that the NFL would like to somehow get another regular season game in there, but that's awfully hard. Because we get too many battles late in the year where it's A.J. McCarron, a quarterback, against Derek Anderson. Right?
Hey, I'm a Jets fan. I'd take A.J. McCarron tomorrow.
I was saying, though, but those are two backup quarterbacks.
Oh, of course. I know.
And you have a lot of backup quarterbacks that are forced into action, and it kind of takes away from going on with the game.
Right.
Tough one today for Wisconsin football. Jack Ceci, who's just a fabulous linebacker, lost for the season, tore his ACL, and he's a senior, no less.
That's awful.
Yeah, that's hard. He is a really good player, Chris. Really is. He's had other injuries before. I mean, last year he missed 7 games because he tore his pectoral muscle. And he still was honorable mention all Big Ten last year with it. But he was going to be captain this year. You know, with T.J. Edwards and Ryan Conley, that's going to be a pretty good linebacking core this year. Conley's the one that scored the touchdown against Penn State in the fumble recovery in the Big Ten championship game. But you know, that's a really tough one. I hate to see that,
especially in his senior year. I mean, that's really upsetting.
Yeah, that's hard.
I mean,
hard. You gear yourself up, you're ready to go, and all of a sudden something like that happens.
Is he like? Is he NFL type? Linebacker?
Oh, he would have been picked. Yeah, he would have been picked. Yep. Yep. I think there's no doubt he would have been picked. Now, what round? I would have said he'd be a mid-round guy, but he still would have been picked.
Right. Well, maybe he still will. Hopefully that won't be his last football moment, you know?
Yeah, I hope not. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more in a moment. Spider in the final half hour. Here in the final hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Disney's plan for ESPN is shrouded in uncertainty. That's the headline of this Market Watch article by Trey Williams. Says the Walt Disney Company has finally given in to the streaming shift that has completely altered the media landscape in the last few years and battered the company's worldwide leader in sports, ESPN. Disney, whose stock went down again today, it just changed again, laid out plans to launch a much-awaited direct-to-consumer streaming service for ESPN to combat the damage the company has suffered from cord-cutting. The company also said it plans to nix its licensing deal with Netflix and pull its movies from the service and launch a Disney-based service. Well, that's a big move by them.
Yeah. So when they said that, first Netflix's stock took a pounding. They lost like 5%. And then the following day, Everybody was like, hold on a second.
Netflix is down 3.8% today.
And then all of a sudden everybody's like, wait a second, Disney's going to take on Netflix? Hold on. Let's slow down.
And then Disney's down a percent and a half today.
Right. They took a 4% hit yesterday. Like, it's continuing. Like, it's just no good. But Disney's looking to buy something called BAMTech, which was involved in Major League Baseball streaming. And they're going to try and stream sports events live. I think that's the plan for ESPN. And it sounds ambitious, but if anybody could do it, I would imagine Disney could do it.
But again, ESPN, which, by the way, had been the gold star of the company for a long time. They really were. I mean, when Disney was struggling a little bit with movies and so forth, ESPN was able to kind of make up for it in terms of the profits. And now it's turned around where, because they've got Pixar, the Star Wars franchise they now have.
They have Marvel.
Right. They've been able to, you know, get great profits there, while ESPN's profits, and ESPN's still profitable, but the profits are much, much lower. And it's become a problem for them. And to be honest with you, I found interesting, when I had Jim Miller on the show, I said, how surprised are you that the, quote, worldwide leader in sports who acts like they're the expert in everything media can't figure out what to do about this? They are the one entity that cannot figure out what to do about cord cutting.
Well,
They're completely lost.
Yeah, it seems like this is the plan to go. The article I'm reading is from a site called The Verge, and their basic premise is that the biggest issue they're coming up with is how to price this thing so it doesn't like price out people, and it would exclude ESPN programming like SportsCenter. It would exclude core programming and go more for a live event type thing. They want to feature approximately 10,000 live regional, national, international games and events per year. 10,000. Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, Major League Soccer, Grand Slam Tennis.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think that's correct, because the bottom line is live sports is what is the way to go. I think we have to do news here, don't we?
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Spider Caldwell in the final hour today. Looking forward to having him on. Open lines this half hour, 1-800-795-9565. Great to have Chris on board today.
Yes, warts and all.
Yeah, except all my warts.
Hey, did you see that the NFL is going to hire 24 full-time referees? Does that float your boat at all? Does that mean anything to you?
Sean sent me that. They should be full-time officials. If you're going to be a $14 billion a year industry with the idea you'd like to be a $25 billion industry, I think part of the formula has to be having full-time officials, because the arbitration of your game is too important. Let's get to this day in sports history. 1947, William Odom completed an around-the-world flight. He set a solo record, completing the flight in 73 hours and 5 minutes. 1971, Harmon Killebrew became the 10th Major League player to hit 500 career home runs. 1973, Arnold Palmer did not make the cut at the PGA Golf Championship for the first time in his career. And in 1981, Pete Rose hit a single and broke the National League all-time hit record with 3,631 hits, breaking Stan Musial's record for most hits in the National League. That is this day in sports history. Major League Baseball taking place this afternoon. A couple of games, at least, are taking place this afternoon. The majors, including the Tigers and the Pirates at Comerica Park. And let's see here. And you know what I always notice on my, both my ESPN and my tablet, is Pirate games never come up on the list. They lead it 6-3, bottom of the seventh inning. The Pirates lead it. Reds have won. They beat San Diego 10-3. Phillies and Mets tonight at 7:05 this evening.
There was a list of the most disappointing players in baseball on ESPN, and a Met and two Mets and one Philly actually made this list.
I would say Michael Franco was the Philly.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Vince Velasquez will go for the Phils tonight, 2-6, 4.82 ERA. Jacob DeGrom, 12-5, 3.36 ERA.
Who was not a disappointment.
Mets tonight.
Yeah, who was not a disappointment for the Mets.
Yeah.
The only thing.
He's been very, very good.
He's the only thing. And you know, yeah, it's just, it'll be a fun game tonight, at least. They always have good ones, Phillies and Mets, so.
Yeah, it will be. Coach K is going to have knee replacement surgery. Let's see. And,
Didn't Marvin Lewis just return from something like that?
I think so, yeah. The St. Louis Cardinals, their rally cat. They're looking for it after it reportedly went missing late Wednesday. The stray feline entered the Cardinals' lower Wednesday night, interrupting play with the Royals. With the bases loaded in the sixth inning by running onto the field and toward the center field wall. One pitch after a grounds crew member, Lucas Hackman, painfully retrieved the scared kitten. Yadier Molina blasted what turned out to be the game-winning grand slam. What happened to the cat? Well, after a series of events, the Cardinals now say it is missing. Hackman told SportsCenter on Thursday morning that he took the cat up to the main concourse and put it down outside the stadium gate near the Stan Musial statue, as his hand was covered in blood from bites and scratches from the cat. As Hackman was taken to the hospital to attend to his injuries, the Cardinals said ushers tried to contain the cat when a fan grabbed it and claimed that it was hers. Cardinals said they caught up to the fan as she left the ballpark to ask her questions, but she abruptly left with the cat. The team, according to reports, said the woman lost track of the cat in City Garden, a park in St. Louis. "We are hopeful someone will find the cat and contact us so we can properly care for it," the Cardinals in a statement. "Our grounds crew is working on developing a stray animal protocol to ensure the safety of both the crew and the animals should this happen again. In the meantime, the Cardinals are looking to scratch and claw their way back to the top of the division standings."
But bum.
They win the third straight for the Cardinals against the Royals, and the fifth overall. The Cardinals are now a game and a half back of the Cubs in the National League Central. Mike Matheny said after the game, "I'm not really a cat person, but I did like that one."
I thought ball players like cougars. Yikes.
Yeah, but see, the cat stopped the game, and then they got a grand slam after it. That's why they love it.
And, of course, the Cubs, if you know anything about, like, you know, the baseball history and the curses and all that, they don't like cats.
Oh,
69, the whole thing.
Oh, I know.
So that's it's an interesting little storyline.
Yeah.
The rally cat. Wow.
Everybody needs a...
Remember the rally monkey back when Anaheim was winning the World Series? Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
It was frustrating and annoying.
And the Thundersticks.
That's right. And the rally... Ugh.
The entire game on TV. Bum, 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 bum. I'm like, oh, okay. Between this and having to endure Barry Bonds, this is hard.
Yeah, it was... That was a rough series, yes.
It makes it a hard World Series to watch, and I watched all seven games of that thing. John Lackey won the seventh game. So. Hmm. I think John Lackey is the only pitcher in the history of baseball to win two deciding games of the World Series with two different teams. Because he did in 2013 with the Red Sox. Something like that.
I'm going to find out for you. I'll let you know.
Game 7 with the Angels in 2002 and Game 6 for the Red Sox in 2013. He did 11 years apart. So he's looking it up right now.
Yeah, you need to give me a second.
You need a better Google search there. But back to work today for football. No Big Ten Network there today. Hopefully you get a chance to watch some of the BTN coverage last night. Jack was a part of that last night. We're standing at practice, and they came over and they said, "Hey, do you have a few minutes to go on the set with Dave Revson?" And Jack's like, "Yeah, sure." And Jack looks over at me. He says, "Why don't you come over? Hold up cue cards." Oh, God. See, Dick McPherson passed away. And I interviewed Dick McPherson one time. He was Syracuse coach. What a character he was. He also was the Patriots coach at one point. What a character he was. Okay. He told this great story about going to Penn State, McPherson. He told it to me on the show. This is back, my goodness, I want to say this is back in the late 80s. I had him on the show. And he goes, the Catholic Church here in town is Our Lady of Victory. And they have, on Saturday mornings, they have a 7 o'clock and a 9 o'clock Mass over there. So McPherson goes over to the 7 a.m. Mass, and he said, it turns out there's two people there. It's he and Joe. And he tells the story that at the end of the service that Joe goes over to light a candle, And so McPherson says he doesn't want to be outdone, so he goes over and he lights one next to him, and they both kneel down and pray. And he says Joe gets up to leave. And they look over, and when Joe leaves, McPherson blows out Joe's candle. Now, this is back when they had them. They don't have them at Our Lady of Victory now. So, the candles. That's Coach Mack. He was an absolute character. I mean, a great coach, too. I mean, please, I mean, don't think Dick McPherson was not a really good coach. He was a really good coach. But he also had a great personality.
Well,
great personality.
Usually when guys are around that long, there's usually something to it.
Oh, I mean, Coach Mack coached at Syracuse, coached in the pros. He was with the Patriots. I mean, you know, he's at UMass for a long time. But was just a really good guy.
So the John Lackey thing, he did indeed win two. He won with the Angels in 2002, and then he won Game 7 for the Red Sox in 2006. I don't know if he's the only ever. I haven't been
able to do it with two different teams,
right? I'm not seeing anything else.
Because Bob Gibson, for example, won two Game 7s in 64 and 67. I mean, I'm talking about with two different teams. But not only that, he did it 11 years apart. Now, that is also unusual.
Yep, that's definitely impressive.
Yeah. And, some guys are really good big-game pitchers. Well, he's always been a very good big-game pitcher.
No, the other guy, like El Duque, used to do that for the Yankees, too. He'd be garbage all year long, and then all of a sudden, World Series. He's Bob Gibson all of a sudden. What happened?
Well, his brother LeVon was a very good postseason pitcher. LeVon Hernandez.
Well, when they gave him a truck-size strike zone, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying, but they're both good postseason pitchers.
Yeah, it's true. It is true. Indeed.
Let's see. Well, preseason, your Jets, I mean, you're going to have to take a long, hard look at your quarterback.
Oh, God. I'm not going to take a long, hard look at anything. I'm optimistically looking at a 4-12 season, and that's my optimism. That's me going, you know, if a few things break right and the ball bounces for us, we can win four games this year. They might be the worst team in football. They might be. I think the Browns actually have made enough improvement that the Jets might actually be the worst team in football. How Todd Bowles still has a job is beyond the scope of my brain. I don't know. I have no idea. It's above my pay grade.
Well, you know what? I was listening to after the Spice game last night. I was driving home, and I had the Red Sox Rays game on, and it turned out it was the Tampa Bay broadcast team. They're talking about Kevin Cash, because right now the Rays are slumping. And with the Rays slumping, obviously, and the Red Sox went in and kind of cleaned them up a little bit. Okay.
Got healthy on them.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the Red Sox have been hot. I mean, the Red Sox have won. What have they won now?
Eight in a row.
Four, five, seven, eight in a row now?
Eight in a row, yep.
Yeah, they won
9-1
eight in a row.
In the last 10, yeah.
Yeah, so they won eight in a row, and they're playing well. And they're eight in a row includes over 500 teams like Cleveland and Tampa Bay. Yep. So it's not like they're out there like against the Little Sisters of the Poor cleaning up.
Right.
They have four against the White Sox, obviously. So they're talking about slumping. And they were saying this, like, look, you know what? You can say it's a manager problem. You can say it's a coach problem. You can say it's a pitching coach problem. He says, look, the bottom line is this. He says, the players are going to play. The players have to play. He said, you can talk about schematics and you can talk about it. He said, but the players have to play. And I've talked about this many, many times. What is the biggest thing that you need with any team? You need execution. Execution. You know, I know, like, football is always the best. Oh, the play calling. Play calling. Like, anybody knows what play calling is. Seriously. You don't know what they're trying to set up, why they're trying to set up. No, I mean, play calling is not perfect. I mean, because nobody goes out and does a perfect job. as close as this program seems to be getting there. So,
but I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying. But again, it's the people who put the talent on the field, you know.
Todd Bowles is a good coach. I think he actually is a good coach.
I think he's a good coordinator.
Okay, the problem is he's not the guy that procures the talent.
But they had talent the past 2 years. It's not like they've been a terrible team the past 2 years. Their defense should be tremendous. Their defensive line should be tremendous. And they still ranked fairly well last year. I think they were number 11 in the league on defense, which isn't amazing. But when you have Darrell Revis, who, you know, turned from Revis Island to Revis Continent, you know, he couldn't cover anybody. But still, even with all the secondary problems.
But. Okay, this is where the Patriots are so smart. The Patriots seem to have, in their evaluations, an understanding of the shelf life of their players. Right? When they felt Darrell Revis' shelf life was nearing an end,
right?
They made no attempt to re-sign him.
Agreed. Completely agreed. Across the board. Belichick's a genius. The general manager's a genius.
It's not being a genius. It's just an ability to understand and know your players.
Oh, I mean...
Right? They had to play against him for years, so they saw him in his prime. They felt, okay, let's bring him in. He may not be at his prime, but he's better than what we have. And then they looked around and said, you know what? We can start to see the deterioration. Well, the Jets go, oh, we got to get him back. Well, okay, there's. Don't you have to be a little bit leery when they don't want him back?
Right. I'm in agreement with you. I think they should. It's not just Bowles. It's the general manager. It's the whole thing. But last year, watching the team that they had when they nearly made the playoffs the year before, they should have been better than they were, and they weren't. They just weren't. And a lot of it was, you know, you watch a team every week, and that's what you're going to come across. What you're going to see more than, you know, the average person. Not saying you're the average person, but I agonized over every game last year, and he's not a good coach. He lost good players for some reason. Like, they weren't playing for him the way they were the year before, for whatever reason. And that's on the players, too. But I don't know.
Believe me, it's mostly on the players.
No, I agree with you. They're the ones making all the money.
Fans fall in love with players. They don't fall in love with coaches.
No, that's absolutely true. You're absolutely right.
All right. And the bottom line is, players have to play.
Yep.
And, you know, what makes you a genius? Well, what makes you a genius are good players.
That's kind of true.
Okay. One time, we were doing the talk show on Thursday night. We used to do the talk show with Joe Paterno in the coaches' conference room adjacent to the coaches' locker room, right, downstairs. And there's a couple of huge whiteboards in there, because they would use that as a pre-practice or post-practice meeting room sometimes. And somebody called up, and they were asking a question about scheme this and scheme that, whatever. And we went to a commercial break, and Joe says, just shakes his head, and he looks at me. He says, yeah, everybody talks about scheme. And he gets up, and he puts 11 circles in a formation. It's during the commercial break. And then he puts up 11 X's in a formation. He says, you want to know the key to this play working? He says, I want to know what name is inside that circle, and I want to know what name is attached to that X.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says, okay. Hey, that is the secret to the game.
So then what's the difference between, like, when somebody says, oh, well, he's a system quarterback? Like, it brings up an interesting thing, like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Which one survives without the other? Or are they just coexistent?
Well, it doesn't really matter about which one. The fact is they work together and they win. I mean, it doesn't really matter about systems and things like that. A system quarterback is more in college. For example, let's take Bryce Petty, who's on your team. Bryce Petty would be the definition of a college system quarterback. And what happens is that he would get to the line of scrimmage at Baylor, and he did not have the responsibility of checking out of plays, so he never had to check out of a play. Essentially, he only had one read on the play, maybe two, all right? And normally it's on the same side. And he did not have to adjust protections. That's a system quarterback where everything is programmed for you. Now, Hackenberg, the difference between he and Petty, for example, is that Hackenberg, you put a whiteboard up there, he'll blow you away. Right? He'll get to the line of scrimmage, he'll go, okay, he's the mic, he's up, he's down, okay? And you're saying, what's up and down? Even though the two guys may be down,
right?
Okay? Right? That's to tell the offensive line what the protection combination happens to be. In other words, he may be, you know, that guy's down, okay, but that guy's up even though he's in a three-point stance. And that tells them as to who has which responsibilities if that was an outside linebacker.
Well, apparently he's having a hard time breaking the huddle.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I
read that the other day.
Oh, believe me. You know how many times I've seen, hear people yell out, break it right?
Right.
I read stories like that and I go, what, you've never seen this before? I mean, seriously. I mean, I see stories like that. I'm like, you know how many times I've heard, hey, get back, break it right?
Right.
I've heard it, okay, 100 times. Right? Because you're trying to set a tone. Okay? It has nothing to do with it. You're trying to set a tone when you do that. You're trying to get a little juice, a little enthusiasm out there. Hey, take this seriously. Break it like we're in a game. Here we go. You know, I mean, that's all that is. And, you know, I read stories like that, and I sit there and go, what the heck? Okay. Great.
Hope it's you're right.
Big story. Ooh. I'm sitting there like, oh, that's no story. It's a story for those who don't know, I guess. But as somebody who has seen this a lot, you sit back and go, that's really? You know how many times I've heard that? Break it right. All right. We'll take a break. News top of the hour, Spider next hour, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.